Season 2, episode number 33, the first time that I caught him in a lie. Expect more and pay less from Target. 6 days to save people. Today's episode of the Keep It 100 Girl podcast is brought to you by Target. It's back to school time, so now's the time to get ready with style, backpacks, and supply deals, plus a whole bunch of college essentials and on a student budget. Back to school also means after school activities, such as sports. Now is the time to save on the soccer sponsor's Umbro, where you're going to find deals on soccer gear. Visit keepit100girl.com/podcast, and you're going to look for episode number 33. And there you're going to find the Target shopping link. You could also access it on your phone. And what you're going to do is look for that purple Apple podcast icon, and you're going to search for the Keep It 100 Girl show and look in the show notes for that Target shopping link. Welcome to the Keep It 100 Girl podcast. This is my jam. I love doing this show, discovering 50 Shades of Cray Cray with all of you, which pretty much says what we're thinking but not saying out loud until we meet Nina. But my episodes are directed to the uninformed girl and guy, right? I like to have that positive influence on all of you who are interested in keeping it 100 in their lives, meaning you are ready to keep the conversation real and true with no filters, no fluff, and no boundaries. But here's the clincher. I want to help people who want to learn how to do it with confidence, because I celebrate embarrassment every time, and I want you to get over it. So today I'm interviewing best-selling author Mary Shores. Her book, Conscious Communications, is your guide to creating a life centered around alignment. So whether it's aligning your dreams and your desires, this book, through the use and impact of words, learning how to utilize the right ones to unleash and unlock that God-given talent, your power to create your new reality, whether it's a career, entrepreneurship, a relationship. Mary went from the unthinkable, and you're going to learn about this today, tragedy to a victorious life, and teaches us all how to channel that energy and to do the same for ourselves. So I'm going to start with Mary's rock bottom moment.
It was just a pattern, but I always remember that first time that I caught him in a lie, and I told him how deeply it hurt me, and he looked me in the eyes and he said, "I will never lie to you again." And I believed him.
Mary admits she has not been perfect or led the perfect life. Divorced at 34 with two kids, Mary is owning up to her bullshit and choices, her not so perfect journey in this episode of the Keep It 100 Girl podcast. No one ever told her when she was growing up, the person that you marry is the most important decision you will ever, ever make in your life. She didn't understand then what she certainly understands now is that people are either liars or they're not. But I'm going to let her explain that fully.
So, Mary, are you ready to keep it 100?
Yeah, Nina, I am so ready to keep it 100.
And I'm honored, really, but this is the first time Mary is fully opening up about her past marriage and upbringing and the connection that both had to the choices that she made in her life. So in this next clip, Mary talks about her road to divorce.
But the truth is that my divorce in my life was truly my biggest breakdown moments that I've ever had. I met my ex-husband when I was very young, probably 22 or 23. We met like just in a local restaurant at the bar. I was sitting there eating lunch and he was ordering his lunch. And I just kind of felt something when I met him. Like I knew I was very attracted to him. My ex-husband is extremely handsome, 6'2", just, you know, beautiful blue eyes, really well built. So I was very attracted to him. And we started a relationship that escalated pretty quickly. And as a lot of people in their young 20s do, we were engaged within 3 months. And whoa. Yeah, well, this was 1997. People did that back then. we really, you know, we got on with life. We were married. We were young. I was starting my business. He was working construction. And I think that right away, I was too naive to recognize that our lives were going in two different directions. So what I mean by that is like his career path was going to be very different than my career path, because I was into like being an entrepreneur and starting a business and really growing an empire, where he was really interested in like staying at the same place. That didn't cause us too many problems though. And we actually had a pretty decent marriage. And what happened was in 2006, he got the chicken pox, and he was 34 when he got the chicken pox, and it was really bad. He was actually extremely sick. I didn't even understand how sick he was at the time. But what I can tell you is that after this thing with the chicken pox, his personality changed. He went from a person who was like home every day, playing with our kids, making dinner, you know, really just being that backbone of my life, to being this person who just yelled and screamed and reacted at almost everything, became extremely unreasonable and stopped coming home at night. He also started down a path of extreme pathological lying about places, things like where he was and what he was doing. And it was just like I could no longer recognize him as the same human being. And the reason I bring up the chicken pox is because I always felt that there was something that was triggered by the high fevers, because he was experiencing fevers of like 104. I felt like something triggered in his brain. And we actually went to our primary care physician and we made a list of like all these personality changes that he had been going through. The doctor referred us to a neurologist, and the neurologist did some sort of brain testing and came back and said that he was bipolar. Now, this was a shock to both of us. Like we were thinking, you know, did he have some inflammation in his brain? Like, did he have something causing this problem? But I was not thinking bipolar. I mean, that was the furthest thing from my mind. And the doctor, almost like a psychic reader, began to say the things that were going to happen, said he's likely to get into drug abuse. He's likely to do this or this or that. And it was really hard to swallow, because I thought, how can you see all that from a brain scan? It just, I was in denial. And the doctor wanted him to go on some medication, which he was on and off of for the next 2 years. The medication did help, but it had symptoms that he really didn't want to live with. So we worked on things for like 2 years, and everything came to a head when one day he didn't come home yet again. And when he finally did come home, he pulled in the yard. He didn't even make it into the driveway. He like pulled into the yard, drunk as you can even imagine, stumbled into the house and passed out on the floor. And I don't know what made me do it, but I grabbed his wallet, and I didn't typically do that because I'd always trusted him. But in the last few months, there'd been behaviors, you know, obviously like not coming home at night is going to make a woman wonder right. What he's up to. Right. And I knew he was having problems, but like I didn't think it was something I couldn't trust him about. So anyway, I don't know what made me do it, but I got into his wallet, which is not a boundary that I'd ever crossed before. And when I did that, I went through it, and all I found was an email address, which was his name, which I won't say, but his name at hotmail.com. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's odd, because we sort of had this understanding that we wouldn't have any like hidden email addresses from each other.
Mm-hmm. You're supposed to trust your husband. Isn't that what you, wifey, are supposed to do? When a man says nothing ever happened, beware. I mean, that's every wife's or girlfriend's worst nightmare that is about to come true. So in this next segment, Mary talks about the events leading up to her heartbreak and admits the most embarrassing moments that took place.
And so right away, you know, I'm like, what is this email?
Right.
And I went to the computer and I like put in the email and I didn't know the password. I tried to like wake him up to get the password and he was all like, you know, F you bitch stuff. Kind of, you know, it was just ugly. And so this is what I did, Nina.
What did you do?
It was probably 2 a.m. He was passed out on the floor. I took his wallet, his keys, his cell phone, all his credit cards. I took the computer. I loaded it up in the truck. He had a pickup truck. I put my bicycle in the truck and I drove away. Like, I don't even know what I was thinking. I just gathered everything and I just left and I drove away and I don't even remember where I went, but like, you know, several hours later when it got to probably 6 a.m. and he was awake, he's immediately calling me on the phone screaming like, bring my truck back, bitch. You know, I'm going to kill you. It was insane, his reaction to this. And wow. I said, I'm not bringing your truck back until you tell me the password for that email. And he just for hours was just screaming at me like, bring my fucking truck back. You know, I'm going to kill you, like, blah, blah, blah. You don't know what you're doing. And I stood my ground. I did not bring his truck back until he agreed to give me the password. So then what I did was I drove the truck to a nearby park and I rode my bike to the house to get the password. And like, he realized I was back, but like, I didn't have his truck. So he gave me the password. And I opened up this email. It was pictures of vaginas and it was disgusting. Like, it was so disgusting that I thought I was literally gonna vomit. Like, you know, when you have that physical reaction to something that's so shocking?
Yes. Yeah.
So what had happened was he had signed up for an online service called adultfriendfinder.com. So at the time, I'd never even heard of this, but it was basically an online website for sex. And he had all these emails coming in because he was like on this thing. And I looked at his profile and it was basically like him advertising for sexual encounters. Like, he was ordering McDonald's at the drive-through window. It was the most humiliating thing that I have ever been through in my entire life. We had been in counseling. We had been like, this was just terrible. Like, I don't even have words to explain the feeling that I went through when I was faced with this. Is like, this is my new reality.
So as we have learned, Mary continues to plow through the humiliation of her failing marriage and decides, you know, or has to decide at this point, what is good for her children and more so her self-esteem.
We had 2 children and, you know, I had always looked at women who had been cheated on or anything like that and thought, why would you stay in a marriage? I can tell you that I was really judgy. Like, why would someone stay in a marriage like that? But in my own moment, when I'm like that day, my 2 children both had little league games. And so here I'm trying to, you know, get through this disaster. And I'm thinking, my kids have to get to little league. I have 2 little boys. And I thought, who am I to take my children's father away from them? So I decided to invest even more into our marriage. I mean, obviously there was like a several week period where we were kind of working out that immediate drama that happened. You know, he's like making excuses. He's saying things like, well, I've never actually cheated. I only had a free account so people could send me messages and I can't like respond back. He was trying to tell me the details of how this thing worked. And he's like, he's so stupid because the reason he couldn't sign up for the actual like paid service was because it would go on the credit card, right? And obviously, and then I would see the credit card statement because I was the one who paid the bills. So he felt like, you know, I wouldn't be able to, he would know he would get caught. So he was like too stupid to just go to Walmart and buy like a prepaid credit card so that he could have gotten away with this. But he was also carrying on a relationship with a girl that was 25 years old. And of course he continued to say nothing ever happened. I never did get the truth out of him. We went to more counseling. He went to a therapist that specialized in sex addiction. Right. And basically he had an addiction to masturbation. He was just going through this like, so it was weird because he wasn't interested per se in like a sexual relationship with me, but he was more interested in masturbating. And I hate to say that, but that's like really what happened. And I'm not a frumpy dumpy person. I mean, I was somebody that I'm 5'10", in perfect shape.
Right.
You know,
you consider yourself attractive.
It was mental. But it was, I couldn't see that or understand that at the time. So my inner esteem was just crushed. And so after two more years, it was time for the divorce to happen. So that was in 2008. And the divorce was just a crazy, crazy mess. But it took me 2 years to decide to divorce him, mostly because I did not want to take my children. I didn't want to take my children's father from them. Also, I really loved him, you know, but what I found was that I couldn't get past certain things and I couldn't trust him. And also, he wasn't getting any better. So, like, he wasn't sticking with any sort of bipolar treatment plan and life was really getting very out of control. So I didn't know who this person was anymore. And it also started to turn physical. And he was threatening my life on a regular basis. He was punching holes in the wall. He was just out of control. And I had to get him out of the house.
Right.
Looking back, my first like admission of the part I had to play in this is that, you know, no one ever told me when I was growing up that the person that you marry is the most important decision you will ever, ever make in your life. And, you know, that I tell my son this all the time. I'm like, you know what, Hayden, that's my son's name. He's 16. I say, when you get married, you need to make sure you marry a happy person because their level of happiness or their ability, like if they're living in happiness or they're living in misery, is going to translate to your life.
Right.
And, you know, you can't, like, that is the most important decision. Well, no one ever told me that. As a matter of fact, the advice my mother gave me was one man was just about like the next. So just get married to the first one that comes along, which was what she was taught by her mother. You know, it was just, I think we just had this cycle of unluck in the maternal side of my family. But I thought I had a solid man and I was really blinded by his looks. So when I was young, you know, everything to me was that machismo, that alpha male, that that bad boy, so to speak. And while he wasn't necessarily a bad boy, he kind of looked like one because he was so just adorably cute. And he still is to this day. But I couldn't get past that. And also, the biggest red flag was early on in our relationship, he'd asked me for a ride, like home from work or something. He was working at a power plant. And he got off work at 1 a.m. and I was working late shift at a bar. So I said, yeah, I'll get off at this time and I'll go pick you up. Well, the job was like an hour away and I went to pick him up and he wasn't there. And this was like really before cell phones and all of that stuff. I didn't have a way to get a hold of him. And I looked I mean, here I'm, this power plant was huge. I mean, you're talking a power plant can be the size of a college campus.
Right.
So I'm like in the middle of the night looking everywhere for this guy. And finally, somebody that knew him said, yeah, he left with so-and-so right after work.
No.
So when I got a chance to talk to him about this and I said, look, I'm like, I don't know what happened. And he started saying weird things like, oh, I didn't know if you were really going to come. So I thought I better get a ride with this guy. And eventually he admitted that he just lied to me. And so right there was the red flag, because what I didn't understand then that I do understand now is people are either liars or they're not. Now, this is a big separation point, because pathological lying became a big issue. He would lie about everything. Like, he was trying to quit smoking, he would lie and say he wasn't smoking when he was. He would lie about dumb things, you know.
Right.
It was just a pattern. But there was, I always remember that first time that I caught him in a lie, and I told him how deeply it hurt me, and he looked me in the eyes and he said, I will never lie to you again. And I believed him. And you know, I see it now, but I could not see it when I was 22, that he wasn't even making a promise that he was capable of keeping.
Right.
And so that was definitely the red flag.
The list. Oftentimes, we as women, this is like our biggest fault, but we refer to that mental list that we tweak, add, subtract, keep, you know, all of that over time. Mary refers to her list earlier in the episode, and she makes reference to her current list. Now,
as far as the family stuff, you know, I had criteria. As a young girl, I was like, oh, they have to be at least 6 foot tall, and they have to, you know, they have to have like this criteria. And mine were kind of dumb back then.
when you're 20 something, we all had that list, you know?
Right. It was really stupid. But yeah. And also, I think I kind of took the masculine for granted back then. Like, for me, and if I'm really being honest, when I was in my 20s, I mean, men were around to sort of buy me drinks and entertain me, and I didn't take them seriously beyond that.
Right.
And I hate saying that because it's terrible, and I feel for men who went through that. You know, whether it's with me or any other woman who behaved that way, I just apologize that we ever put you through something like that, because it's embarrassing now to admit it. But like you said, it's about the embarrassing moments.
Yes.
I mean, not that the guys don't have a part to play in the drama too, but you know what I'm saying.
No,
anyway,
I relate.
Yeah, but you know, as far as that, so like I did have criteria, but I didn't even stick to it. So like, for example, one of the things for me was that it was very important that the person that I was with have good credit, and he didn't have good credit, and he also had a DUI, and but I was just so into him. I was just so infatuated with him that like my own value system went out the window. So all of a sudden it was like no big deal that he had a DUI, and it was like no big deal that he didn't have good credit, because it was easy for me to, you know, go in and fix his credit. That was like, I mean, I own a collection agency, so I grew up in a collection agency family, so I knew how to fix his credit. It was not, but you see how like I stepped outside of my own value system because I was so like in lust and infatuated with him, and thinking that I was going to have this fantasy life. After the divorce, his sisters and cousins started to call me up, and they said, Mary, like, first of all, they were all very apologetic, and they were like, well, you know, we're keeping him, or we're keeping you, and we're getting rid of him and the family, was kind of this attitude with the sisters and the cousins and stuff. Not his mother, but definitely like his sisters and stuff. And they said, listen, they said, this is what he was like before he met you. And I thought that was really interesting, because it took me back to that moment where the doctor said he was bipolar, because I thought, well, if he's bipolar, how could I have not seen this? And so when these other women came to me in the family and said, this is what he was like, and when he met you, he just totally settled down. And I thought, isn't that interesting?
So this is an existing problem.
It was an existing problem, and I was completely blind to it. No one in his family, and why would they? You know, why would someone in his family tell me that? People thought I was a good influence on him, and they were happy that we were together. They were happy that we got married. And, you know, it's been 10 years now, and he's still in that cycle of drinking and drugs and just... I just, it's really sad. He doesn't...
Like barely surviving.
Yeah, and he doesn't have much of a relationship with my children. He really does his best to try to get them to hate me. And with one of them, one of my sons is special needs. He's on the autism spectrum. He's got Asperger's. And so he tends to be influenced by his father. My other son, who's 16, now, when he was younger, he was influenced by his father, but now that he's older, he's kind of in the mindset to say, yeah, Dad, she's the one who does everything for us. You do nothing. And so you don't know what you're talking about. So he's finally of that age where he can speak up on my behalf.
Right,
but you know, he also still loves and respects his father. And in kind of this way of like, you know, my father is teaching me what not to do in life.
Right. And he's the firstborn, right? So there's that.
No, he's 16. My other one is 17.
Okay.
They're only a year apart.
Right. So you have three sons?
Two
and a daughter.
Well, so I had a daughter. Actually, that's another story. I had a daughter from a previous relationship, but she passed away when she was a year and a half. I was very alone. So outside of those who were really, really close to me, no one knew what was going on. I mean, this was so humiliating. I only know of one other friend who went through something similar with like the sex websites and stuff. And she shared with me like how it's just this humiliating thing. And I felt so much shame. I didn't want anyone to know, you know, for several reasons. Like, I was definitely internalizing it. So here's one thing, you know, if I let people know and then he and I worked out, I didn't want my friends judging me. Like, why did you stay with him? I was running a business and I really had a professional image that was very important to me, especially in my 30s. That was, my career was climbing fast and I just didn't want, I live in a small town. I didn't want word to get spread around to my clients or anything like that.
Right. And how about now? Because your listeners, your audience, your clients are going to hear your story. Is it different now that you're older and you're just like at that point in life where either you accept me or you don't, or too bad, I don't care?
Well, I would say that I've never shared this level of detail. Like, people know that I went through a divorce. People know that there was situation, but they don't know the details of it.
Yeah.
And it's in my book. So the Conscious Communications, a lot of the divorce stuff and the recovery of it is in my book. But even after the divorce, I mean, I went through a 2-year breakdown after the breakup of my marriage where I couldn't work. I was unfunctionable. Completely, right. 100% unfunctionable, and digging myself out. I mean, I literally thought I was going to die like a penniless bag lady. So I was doing what I could to keep together my career. But with those people that I relied on the most was my staff. I've built like a dream team in life. at my office. And it's so interesting because I haven't done that because I've been the best leader all of my life. I haven't done that because I run such a great organization with great benefits. But the reason I was able to build such a loyal, fabulous team at my office is because my business was built on a mission. So I started to realize probably in my late 20s, early 30s, that I had some issues because of abandonment. So my sort of like backstory of my childhood is, you know, I'm a Generation X, and it's so interesting because just this morning I was reading a blog about Generation X women and how they are just completely stressed out and overwhelmed, and most of them are divorced and just like this, because we're the first generation that grew up having a broken home. You know, before that, the generations, the families stayed together. I mean, even when they had problems, they stayed together. Mm-hmm. I was the first generation raised by a workforce of women who were in the workforce and not stay-at-home moms. And I think that my mother got divorced when I was very young. I was sent to live with relatives. So I was born in California. My father is a nuclear engineer, and he was in the Navy at the time. So when he and her split, I literally just never saw him again. And my mother sent me off to live with relatives, and this created a fear of abandonment in my brain and body. Like, that just became my thing, this fear of abandonment. But of course, I didn't know that or recognize that as a child. I think I started to realize after I was divorced, and especially when I would see other men with their daughters, and how these daughters were like princesses in their eyes, and these daughters were like the apple of daddy's eye. And I never had that. I never experienced what it was like to be a princess in a man's eyes. My mother, when she eventually came back to get me a couple of years later, she had remarried, and I met my stepfather when I was 6 years old, literally in the driveway of the house that I was about to move in. And my mom said, "This is your dad now, call him dad." And I did. I was six, and I don't remember being traumatized by it or anything. But what I do know is that I had a really amazing stepfather, but I was still never the apple of his eye, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I mean, so it's not a complaint. It's just not the same bond as other daughters have with their fathers. He's an amazing man, and I'm really grateful that he was in my life, because a lot of what I'm able to do today is because of having a strong rock in the family. But it just wasn't the same. Like, he didn't put me on that princess pedestal. And so I think that that definitely affected me, and it also affected my ability to choose a man who would also see me as an apple in his eye. You know, choosing a man, like what I know now that I didn't know then, is that I need to be with a man who looks at me in almost like awe, you know, like, right. Wow, look at her. She's so incredible. And I need to be with a man that I can respect and admire for what he's doing and what he's about. But it took me a long time to understand that, because what I was doing was I was dating people even after my divorce that they looked at me in awe of what I was doing, but they also resented me for it at the same time.
All right. So Mary really self-checks me and calls me out on my own bullshit. We had a conversation, a side conversation, where I was referencing, you know, the downfalls of dating an entrepreneur. And that most people, or most men, once they see you kind of growing, reaching a plateau, are resentful and jealous of it. Not just men, even your friends. So I captioned it as a downfall of dating, and really how people are intimidated. And so hear what Mary has to say about that.
Nina, I'm going to be honest with you. That's our own bullshit.
Oh, really?
It is. Because you know why? It's because we choose men that are going to do that to us. And the reality is, that a man truly in his masculine will not do that. And I've seen so many examples of it. I was recently doing an interview with a lady that I know, and we were talking about, she's a relationship coach, and we were talking about these different levels of relationships, and she called it a Harvard level relationship, a state level college relationship, or a community college level relationship. And I thought, I loved it, like, because
I know.
She's like, listen, if you want the Harvard level relationship, then first of all, that takes time. That takes a lot more effort. And, you know, it takes a lot more discernment about who we choose to spend our time with. And like now, I totally see that there were men that were completely enamored with me, completely looked at me like this bright shining star. And I overlooked every single one of them. And I continue to choose the exciting bad boy.
Yeah.
You know what right. I'm saying?
Yes, 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 yes.
So one thing Mary said in our conversation that really caught my ear is that fixer profile personality. If you've heard my past episode, which is episode number 74, is she a fixer? So this is where women have an unhealthy wish to fix others, especially when it comes to relationships. And being or attracting partners that are seen as someone who needs fixing.
Sounds like you wanted to fix, and then gets to a point where you're overwhelmed because you can't fix. You could put a Band-Aid on it, but what's broken is broken.
I definitely think that I would always, and this is still true, like I just see the good in people. So,
okay. You
know, like with my ex-husband, I just only saw the good in him. You know, in my book, I talk about this yoga term. It's called avidya. So it's ancient Sanskrit. And what avidya means lens of perception. And it's like this, when you're seeing things not as they are, but there's three levels of this. So there's like, you can see things through rose-colored glasses, meaning everything is always better than it really is. But
right. You
could also see things as worse than it is. So that I call that seeing things through mud-colored glasses, when you're just seeing everything worse than what it is. But vidya means true knowledge. That means seeing things as they are. And think about the decisions you make and how it's different if you are seeing the world or a person or a relationship or a work situation or whatever, if you're seeing that as better than it is, then you're betting on potential. You're living in a fantasy that is not real. And eventually that fantasy bubble will burst.
Right.
And so, but on the opposite end of things, if you're seeing things worse than what they are, then you're not following opportunities. You know, you're probably not getting vulnerable and uncomfortable enough to really do anything. You know, these are people that are just have a negative mindset. Even after all of these things that I've told you, like never once do I see myself as a victim. Like I know the part I played in all of this, which is extremely important. So I am not a victim of it. I caused this through my choices and my actions, and I might not have been able to see it for whatever reasons, but those were my lessons to learn.
Right.
And so when you can see things as they are, this is your best state of being to make decisions that are going to connect you to an amazing future. And so, you know, I am grateful for all of the things that I went through because I'm able to, like I've shared them in my book, I share them with other women, and I do everything I can to help people see like these are the really important things in life.
I asked Mary, what does she want to speak into existence based on how her life path has gone? And basically, at this point in time in her 40s, what is it that she wants to overcome?
Oh, I love this question because I have an entire chapter in my book dedicated to exactly what you're talking about. So I am working on, I just started developing what I'm calling my core four. And my core four is my four areas of focus in life. So, and it changes, you know, they don't have to stay the same all the time. And it's different than a goal because it's more of what you focus on. So right. you have a goal in mind, but your focus is really what's important because that's what makes your goals happen. So right. What I'm speaking into existence is my 100% full healing in life of mind, body, spirit, to be whole and to be healed and to be just like taking my broken heart and putting it back together so that it shines like a diamond with millions of facets. So all of those broken pieces come together in a million facets of just beautiful shining light. I am definitely speaking that into existence. I'm also speaking into existence that my brand and my book and my speaking creates a ripple effect as it already has, but continues to grow this ripple effect where I am at the forefront of waking people up to the reality that we are in control of our own lives and where they can imagine a life where they are doing work that they love, that's aligned, that work is aligned with their values, and they're living each day knowing that they are 100% in control. And also speaking into existence, the amazing relationship with both of my children, that they are happy and healthy and pursuing their goals, getting into college, getting their driver's license, going into that next phase of life, just as like the beautiful men and masculine way that they are meant to be. And finally, speaking into existence, my last core four, that my business just grows and expands this year with all kinds of industry involvement, making a difference, living our mission, and always attracting the most amazing clients and staff possible. I've not been perfect. I mean, it's difficult to be in that position as a mother to talk up their father when he's really like not a good dude. But what I've done was I put my children in other disciplines and leadership programs. So one of the best things ever was I put them through a Taekwondo program. So just through our local community, and they, you know, throughout their middle school years, especially, they were heavily involved and became black belts, and they were receiving good messages through these leaders at the Taekwondo. Also, for my younger son, my 16-year-old son, I put him in Tony Robbins Global Youth Leadership Summit. I guess I felt like what I did was look at what's missing and ask myself, how can I get them? How can I plant the seeds of mindset in their minds without having their father? One of the things that people said to me right after my divorce was like, don't date. And I hated that advice because I mean, looking back, I realize this now. I was 34 at the time when I was getting my divorce, but I'm 44 now. And I mean, it's not something that's easy to admit, but I didn't really know how to not be in a relationship because I had been in a relationship since I was like 15 years old. And so it's only now that I'm taking time just to be completely with myself, where I don't feel like I have to have a date on a Saturday night, or I don't have to have that person to travel with. And when I invested more in myself and my own personal development journey, you know, that's when everything started happening. I feel like we live in a time where we always want these like instant transformations. You know, like speaking of Tony Robbins, like you go to a weekend workshop and it's like, oh, you're going to have a transformation in a weekend. And the truth is that true transformation happens in the smallest of pivots over a long period of time. And my own path, my own journey was not a graceful one, but I came out on the other side as a best-selling author, a CEO, a national public speaker, and like, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I'm in a position and have a platform that I can teach that to other people.
I think we're all destined to hit a low in our life at one point. And when I refer to this low, I call it a rock bottom low. You know, we all have that rock bottom moment as we go through different periods of our lives, but I almost feel like the universe is calling or self-checking ourselves to really humble us for a minute, whether it's just to stay put or realize, okay, how am I going to pivot out of this situation that I'm in to become a better person and excel from there?
Or maybe it's just me time.
It's so true. And if you just take one step in a new direction, and this has been what I have noticed, it's like the universe will meet you halfway. You know, you just take that one step in the direction that you're supposed to go, and things will line up for you to help you out. It's been incredible. I also want to invite, if my story resonates with anyone in the audience, please go on Amazon, check out Conscious Communications by Mary Shores. Just read the description. You know, whenever it's a book, I swear, if you just read the description and the reviews, you'll know whether that book is for you or not. And if you want to get to know me more, you are all welcome to join my Facebook group called Fearless Ambition, and check me out all over social media and my website, which is Mary Shores, shores.com.
And that wraps up another episode of the Keep It 100 Girl podcast. Was this episode good for you? Mary says this: the persistent messages you repeat can frame your thoughts and tap you in a mindset that can be difficult to break. Whether you realize it or not, the words you use are the architects of your life. So I say this to say, choose your words wisely and speak things into existence. Mary is a great example of hitting that rock bottom and turning a negative into many, many positives in her life. Don't forget to review the show on iTunes. I rely on it because of this. It helps me stand out from the crowd and helps women and even men understand us and themselves a whole lot better. Connect with me on social. I love Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and you could use the handle for all three platforms, Nina Babel, NinaBabel. And don't forget to subscribe to The Freaking Truth. If you go to my old school site, ninababel.com, you can catch a free copy there. Let's keep it 100, people, starting today. Smooches!